There's some around, but I think they've already been passed out. And we're looking at Daniel, which is page 8883. We're just going to look at chapter 1 tonight as we begin a series that is on Daniel, but I've kind of strap-lined it as well, a life of prayer in a world of work. A life of prayer in a world of work, because we're going to see as we go through Daniel, and we're going to go through the first half initially, see how we're doing, and then we may go into the second half, which is a very different style. It's actually even written in a different language, and it's the same man of prayer, as we see prayer being a theme even of that latter half as well. So this feels like a very apt place for us to be as we, as a church, are trying to grow in prayer. If you've been here in our mornings, you know that. One of the things we've recognized as a church earlier last kind of autumn, as we were doing a reveal survey, was that as a church, we want to grow in prayer. And so to have a chance to look at Daniel feels very appropriate. But also, we're trying to grow in our heart for mission. Our verse for the year is that the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out laborers into his harvest field. And to be honest, most of the place where many people in the church are serving God, the kind of harvest field, the mission field that we go to day after day, is our workplace. And Daniel's really helpful because he's often living for God in a workplace or in an environment. Here it's almost Daniel at uni, we see in chapter 1, but in a setting where most people around him are not believers. So that's a great opportunity for us as we look into this series in Daniel. But the last thing I want to say too is that one of the things that keeps us from prayer is our lack of faith. I really believe, having spent time in other parts of the world, that we have a dire faith shortage in this country. And one of the great things about Daniel is it's full of miracles. It's full of a big God who does amazing things. And you might even be familiar with some of those things from when you were young and you heard stories from the book of Daniel. But I tell you what, let's let this book build our faith, that we in turn might become people of prayer, that we might right-size our problems as we right-size God, the God who's over all things. So should we read together Daniel chapter 1, and let's see what God has to say for us tonight. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick in understanding, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. It reminds you of John and Sam, doesn't it? Just up here. Definitely the handsome and well-informed, quick to understand. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, a bit like our many university courses. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, he gave the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men of your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, "Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, They looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine, and they were to drink, and gave them vegetables instead. And to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time, set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. Do you ever have moments where you find yourself asking, kind of, why am I here? I'm not necessarily talking about those kind of big questions of why are we here on earth. I'm talking about the times when you maybe find yourself in your workplace and you kind of go, how did I end up in this job? Or maybe you're in a lecture or you've picked a module on your course at college and you're kind of listening in and think, what am I doing here? Do you ever have those kind of moments and those kind of moments where you particularly are kind of asking, you know, what's the purpose in all this? And I'm sure Daniel and his friends, we see very clearly that they're in a foreign place. They're away from home. They're living away from home. And they must have thought at times, how did we get here? What happens? Why on earth, as it were, am I here in this place studying this stuff? They were, after all, those who'd been taken captive, they were in a very hostile environment learning things that were foreign to God. What had happened, as we see here up on the map, is that Jerusalem, in which was part of the kind of southern kingdom, Israel was the northern kingdom. The northern kingdom had already been sort of taken into exile by the Assyrians, but then initially in 605, but it happened in kind of three stages, in 597 and then 587, the people from Judah and Jerusalem were exiled to Babylon. And we see that there. Thanks, Mike, for the little graphic there. And all those people, initially in the first instance, and this is in Daniel, it's the 605 kind of exile, where primarily it was the best people from the kingdom were taken to serve those in Babylon. So Daniel and his friends, they're taken, and they go into this three-year training plan, as we saw in verse 5. And there, they're taught all kinds of stuff. Now, Babylonia had some very brilliant mathematicians at that time. They were kind of cutting edge on some things, but it was all mixed up with paganism, idol worship, you know, magic and sorcery and that kind of stuff. And here they were, a long way from home. And I imagine at times they thought, why are we here? How did we end up in this place studying this stuff? And you know what? This passage shows us something of why they're there. Look back with me at verse 2. I don't know if you noticed this as we were reading it. It says, after having said that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it, in end of verse 1. In verse 2 it says, and the Lord delivered, and maybe we're used to thinking, and the Lord delivered the Israelites from the king of Babylon. Does it say that? Look with me what it says. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with these articles from the temple and stuff like that. You see, actually, this exile had God's hand upon it. God was in it. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't that God had somehow been distant or remote or that things had got out of control. God had a plan, and that plan involved Daniel being in Babylon. And it involved King Nebuchadnezzar, who God was working through. And it involved King Nebuchadnezzar's armies. And it involved Daniel's friends. And I want to say, when you're maybe wrestling with that question, why am I here? When you're there in college or university or in your workplace and you're thinking, how did I end up here? I want you to know this. God has a plan. And his plan involves you, your friends, your colleagues. Your plan, God's plan involves your boss. It involves those you're working with and working for. It involves those who are lecturing you. It is amazing the extent of God's plan. And sometimes our biggest questions, where we kind of think, what are we doing here? How are we end up this place or doing this or that? Sometimes even come when we stop working. When we're retired or when a job stops, when we hoped it didn't. And then we can find ourselves really wrestling with some of these questions. And I want to say, even in that situation, God has a plan. He knows why you're here and why you're doing what you're doing, and we need to look to Him. And so as we look at these kind of situations we find ourselves in, where we might wrestle with, what are we doing here? And it maybe feels a long way from home, a long way from church, a long way from family. I want to ask this question first off. Does it matter how I live? In those kind of situations, we can sometimes think, well, does it matter? A bit like how John said, you know, when he... people go off to uni, they can kind of think, well, no one's looking over my shoulder, I can do whatever I like. And even as Christians, when we're in a new place or we're outside a situation where other Christians are around us, we can think, well, does it matter how I live? And I think instinctively we know what the answer is to this question. What's the answer? Yes, it does matter. We know it matters. But it's actually a bit more complex than that, isn't it? It's a bit more complex than that, because it matters how I live, but when do I fit in, and when do I do something different? When do I just do what everyone else is doing? Well, all the other people at uni are doing this, so I'm going to do it. All the other people at work are doing this. All the other people I know who are retired are doing this. All the other people I know who are you're not working, they're doing this. So when do I fit in, and when should I be different? It sometimes is a bit complex. And what we see here in Daniel is that Daniel is someone who's committed to honoring God. And that is nuanced. Honoring God is actually something that plays itself out differently in different circumstances. So does it matter how I live? Yes, it does. We need to honor God. And we need to learn from Daniel what that looks like in our situations. You know, Daniel here says no to something. We're going to get to that very powerful verse in verse 8 in just a moment. But before Daniel says no to some things, I think let's just pause and recognize that he says yes to some other things. And this is important, because sometimes as Christians, we can kind of retreat from the world, disengage, whereas actually Daniel engages with the world. He doesn't try and escape and go back to Jerusalem. He doesn't say, I'm not going to have any of that education you're giving me. He actually learns a lot of stuff about the Babylonians. He learns about their customs. He gets given a new name, and he accepts it. So there's some things that Daniel says yes to, and there's things that you and I need to say yes to that will fit in and work with those around us. And David Pawson, who was a great lover of God's word, wrote many, many commentaries on it. And he says this about Daniel. He says, in spite of doing what many would call a secular job, Daniel and his friends were in full-time service for God. Indeed, any job can be a sacred vocation if it is so sanctified to God. All believers should be in full-time service. See, Daniel was in full-time service to God. Everything he did, he wanted to do for the honor of God. And brothers and sisters, whatever you're doing, whether you get paid for it or not, whether you think it's unstructured or not, whether you're at college, university, or you're serving in some great company or some rubbish company, you're in full-time service for God. And you and I need to be living and thinking, how do we live for God in these situations? So Daniel says yes to some things. He's engaging with the world around us. And you know, we need those who are Christians who will engage in the arts, who will engage in politics, who will engage in engineering, who will engage in science, who will engage in education, who will engage in local situations, who will engage at the school gate and in the school councils, who will engage in their universities, amongst their colleagues and peers. We need to be those who are willing to engage, but we also need to be those who know when to draw a line. Who know when, as Daniel does in verse 8, to say, but Daniel resolved not to defile himself. He resolved, it began in his heart. He recognized, here there's something, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to draw a line. I'm going to make a stand. I'm going to say, okay, if no one else will, I'll stand. And interestingly, it starts with Daniel resolving, but actually there ends up being four of them. And I've discovered over the years that so often as I make a stand or someone I know makes a stand, others who really have the same stand gather around. And boy, is that great when we're able to stand with friends. It becomes so much more encouraging to have those around us who will stand with us together. Now, why were they making this stand? Well, there's a bit of debate here. Some would say that it was because the Jewish food laws kind of restricted a lot of the food they were eating. And that's well possible. It could be that they said no to the food because there might have been some things like pork and things like that that were prohibited in the Jewish food laws from them to eat. But actually, there's nothing in the Jewish food laws about not having wine. And they seem to say no to the wine as well. So it might be a reason, but it's not the full reason. And it could have been that the food and wine and stuff was offered to idols. And that's very possible. They likely as not did that. And they could have had a hesitancy with eating the stuff that was offered to idols. But the chances are that the vegetables, if everything was offered to idols, may well have been offered to idols as well. So again, it's not sure that it's that. And as I was digging into this, commentary was very helpful. And it said this. This is someone called Joyce Baldwin, and she writes, by Eastern standards, to share a meal was to commit oneself to friendship. It was of covenant significance. Those who had thus committed themselves to allegiance accepted an obligation of loyalty to the king. It would seem that Daniel rejected this symbol of dependence on the king because he wished to be free to fulfill his primary obligations to the God he served. Again, very much about that custom and that culture at that time. But Daniel knew here was something that was important to make a stand. Because though he was working and wanted to serve those around him, ultimately, God came first. And we need to find the ways and the situations where we can say, whether it's through our life and the way we live, not being lazy and doing what we can. That was great to hear that. Or making a stand by what we say, speaking up for God. Great to have those two pictures. We need to find what are those things we need to make a stand in. And you know, often it's as we make a stand in the small things. And chapter 1 in Daniel is a small stand compared to some that are coming later. So we make a stand in the small things. So often then we have courage and able and character is built to make stands in the big things. Phil gave that great word to us last week, be holy. Be holy. It's a call to godly living to say, God, I want to honor you. I want to put you first. So don't withdraw, but also don't compromise. Work out what are those things where you'll draw a line and say, right, enough's enough. I'm not going to cross that line. Now, some people in this room, you draw too many lines. You've drawn so many lines, you're kind of disengaged with the world. And you'll know if that's kind of you, or you might need someone to say, yeah, that's you. Others, you don't draw enough lines. In fact, you kind of keep thinking, well, maybe there's a line there, and then you're like, whoa, whoosh, you've gone past it. And you need to hear this word about some things where you just need to draw a line and say, enough's enough. I'm not going to go any further. And I listened to a guy speaking on this once, which was so helpful, a guy called Vaughan Roberts. He's a pastor in Oxford. And he just asked this question, in different areas, where is the line for you? What are the things where you know, actually, this is something where I kind of struggle to in my workplace or in my neighborhood or amongst my family members, or, you know, there's this culture of doing this and I know there's a line somewhere there and I need to draw a line somewhere. Maybe it's for you, it's something that's kind of pretty obvious. Sometimes it can be. Sometimes, I know in work situations, when I used to work at an engineering firm, and I know from talking to others that work can be so pressured, and the pressures on those in leadership so pressured, that often they will be encouraging those around them to sort of do something which goes against your conscience. Maybe to say something you think, that's not strictly speaking true. And that's pretty easy, isn't it, really? If it's not true, don't say it. Is that not easy? The struggle there is not working out where the line is. It's just having the courage to stick the line in the ground and say, I'm not going to do that. And we need to be those who will have courage. But it's not always easy. But there are other times when it's a bit more nuanced, a bit harder. You know, materialism is rampant in our world, in our culture. So what's the line? Where is spending this much okay, but spending that much not okay? Or take, working hard. Where does working hard good, and where does it become being a workaholic who never has time for God, never has time for, your family or your friends? Where's the line? And there's other things, aren't there, as well? You know, where do you decide, right, I'm going to watch this, but I won't watch that. Where's the line? And again, this guy Vaughan Roberts had a very helpful illustration on that. He said, you know what? It sometimes doesn't matter whether you draw a line there or there. You just must draw it somewhere. A bit like if you were mountain climbing on an icy slope, and suddenly you lose your grip and you start skidding down this ice slope towards a cliff, right? Now, with the ice axe that you've got in your hand, does it matter whether you chuck the ice axe in there or there? Does it matter? It doesn't actually matter tons, but you must put the ice axe in somewhere before you get to there, otherwise you're dead. Do you get what I'm saying? You've got to put the ice axe in somewhere. You've got to draw a line. And in all kinds of things here, you've got to know where to draw a line and say, you know what? Actually, you know, I know that stuff's going to mess with my head if I watch that. So what? I'm not going to watch that. But maybe, just to be sure, I'm careful, I'm just going to put a line here. Because to be honest, if I was skidding down a slope, I would chuck the ice axe in earlier rather than later. Would you not? Yeah? So chuck it in there. And here is one thing I just want to pause on for a moment, because it comes up in the passage here, and that's this whole business of alcohol. Alcohol is such a destructive force in our city. And yet it's such a thing that people socialize, do to fit in. So where is it with alcohol? Where do you decide, right, I'm gonna draw a line there and say, well, I'll go out with my friends and we'll have a drink. But like Sam says, you know, you go out and you do the drinking thing with them, except they're drinking alcohol and you're drinking Coke. And that's a tough call to make. It takes courage. I know what it is. Through most of my university life, I didn't drink alcohol. Save now, from time to time, I do have the odd glass of wine or a beer or something like that. But I was so thankful through university that I wasn't someone who drank a lot, because I saw all kinds of mess around me as people drank too much. And oftentimes people didn't mean to, but they didn't know where to put the axe in, where to say, I'm drawing a line here. And I've seen lives wrecked by drinking too much, but I've never seen anyone's life wrecked by not having anything to drink. Never. But in our city, this is one of those things where you've got to work out where are you going to fit in, and where are you going to say, right, I'm drawing a line there. I found as I came down and worked with people that to be able to sometimes have one drink, that was very helpful, a way of fitting in. But boy, does it take a lot of courage to say no to the second one. A lot of self-control. And if you know you're going to be able to do that self-control, draw the line early. So say, I'll have water, thanks. You can do it. It's possible. But that's the kind of nuance where we need to be mindful of. And the Bible is really clear here. Ephesians 5:18 says this, do not get drunk on wine. So that's a really clear line. Don't get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. We're to be under the influence of the Holy Spirit as He comes and takes hold of our lives. And as we do that, our lives should look different. We're going to be those who, like Daniel was here, 1 Peter says this, 1 Peter 2, verse 11 and 12. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world. That's how Daniel felt, I'm sure, in Babylon. That's how, let's be honest, a lot of us feel when we get engaged in situations with people in the city and the places where God's called us to be. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits us. And so, we're to be those whose lives shine for Him, as Daniel was. And others took note. He honored God, and as he did that, there was something amazing that happened. Look with me at this next and last question, just briefly. As we ask that question, does it matter how I live, where I am? I want to suggest that we're actually also wrestling with another question, and that's this. Is God here too? Is God right there in that lecture hall? Is God right there in the pub with you? Is God right there in that street where you're living? And we know he's kind of here when we come here. But when we go back into those situations where we're wondering, does it matter how I live? Sometimes we can wrestle, is God here too? And again, we know what the answer is. What's the answer? Yes. God is here. Of course he's there. Everywhere is God. And this is the amazing thing. What we discover in Daniel chapter 1. Look with me at... We kind of know God had that plan in verse 2. He was working. We saw that. But look with me at verse 9. Now God caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. God was at work in the official. In as it were, the person who was overseeing Daniel. Like God's at work in your lecturer. He might not be a Christian. God's at work in your boss. He might not be a Christian, but God is at work all around you. I'm a great believer in this, that God is at work around each one of us. And we need to watch for what he's doing. And as we stand up for God, there's this wonderful scripture in the Bible that says, he who honors me, God says, what? I will honor. And as we stand up for God, God honors us and we're able to live for him, to live lives of faith, not fear. Fear, you see, dominates. It dominates universities, dominates colleges, dominates workplaces. Look at verse 10 with me of Daniel chapter 1. Even though God was at work in this official's life, what does the official say, verse 10? I'm afraid of my Lord the King who has signed your food. He's afraid that if he does something here, that the results might not be good. Is anyone at college afraid that they might not get good results? Is any teachers afraid that there might not be good results from their class? Are any people at uni afraid that, they might not be able to get the job they need? Anyone at work afraid that if the fear dominates the workplace. Dominates fear of what others are going to think and fear of failure. And we're to be those who, because we know God's around, we know God rules and reigns, we're to be those who don't have fear, we have faith. Faith to, in a discerning way. And notice the wisdom that Daniel has to say to this God, to this official, well, I'll tell you what, just test us out for 10 days. See if that works. That's a wise response. And then to say, look how God is going to work as he does that. And again, in the same way, we need to have wisdom and discernment. To know where to stand with courage. Where to draw that line and say, you know what? I am going to honor God by making this stand. Yes, I'm going to fit in where I can. I'm going to engage with this world. But I'm going to make a stand. And I'm going to choose to honor him. So we just close. There is one who came and fitted in and drank with people and went to parties. And people called a friend of sinners. So was the level of his engagement in this world. He is none other, of course, than Emmanuel, the one at Christmas time we've been thinking about. God with us came into our world. And yet, as Philippians 2 says, he humbled himself. He became obedient even to death on a cross. And as he humbled himself, as he sought to honor God with how he lived, what's the next verse say in Philippians 2? That God exalted him. Gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow. Folks, as Christians, we're to follow him. We're to be those who look to Jesus, who are willing to go the way of the cross, the way that might be costly, because we're willing to say, Jesus, we want to honor you and trust that you're at work around us. And as we honor you, you'll honor us whenever he chooses and deems fit for that to be. So I want to call us today to be those who know when to fit in and know when to make a stand as we seek to honor God, trusting that he's at work within us. And I want to suggest this just as we end, that you're going to really struggle to do that without the power of God's Spirit at work in your life. Without a close walk with God where you're listening and you're looking to him for direction, for counsel. And there's just two words that I felt led to tonight to say, folks, I really think we need these. Whatever situation you're in, whether you're in school or uni or work or you're out of work, I think we need these two things. I think we need discernment and courage. Do you need discernment? Do you need courage? I believe we massively need these in these days. And again, discernment's a gift of the Spirit. And I look in the scriptures and I see that as people are filled with the Spirit, they have an amazing courage. And so I'm just going to invite the band to come back up now. And I'm going to pray. And I'm going to ask some folks to just be willing to pray for people. And we're not in a rush tonight. We've got time now. The band got a few songs up their sleeve. And I'm just going to ask if Phil and Steve and Graham, if you guys would be able to come out and just be available for prayer. Graham and Margaret, would you be able to come out for prayer? Jason and Katie as well, would you just be able to come? So there's tons of people. Maybe a few of you could be at the sort of back there around the table and sort of spread out around here. And could I ask you to also be just available for prayer? And what I'm going to do is I'm gonna encourage first, if you're involved in any kind of study, please, will you just come forward for prayer? We need you to be just anointed for what you're doing and for knowing this discernment and having the courage to stand. And then I'm just going to say as well, particularly if you're in a work situation, please come and get prayer for that discernment and courage. Those are the things that people are going to be praying for you. Fresh filling of God's Spirit and discernment and courage in the things you do. Okay, and then anyone, welcome. We all need in different ways. Can I just ask if those folks could just move? Phil and Steve, could you just come in that kind of area around there? Maybe Jason and Katie over here. Graham and Margaret, Anne and Graham. Could you just come around here? Would that be possible? Let's go now. And why don't we all just stand? And I'm just going to pray, and then the band are going to play. And please, guys, let's come and receive prayer tonight. So, Father, I just say thank you for Daniel. Thank you that he shows us that it is possible to have discernment and courage in very alien environments. And Lord, I pray now, come Holy Spirit, come upon us, come give us courage to just receive not just prayer now, but Lord, to be able to know of your leading in our different situations. So often, Lord, we struggle to have courage anywhere, here or there, Lord. So please, God, help us. Help us make that stand. And I ask all this in the power of your name.